The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're off and running on another week of broadcasting. Hopefully you had a nice weekend, beautiful day here at Edstone. A little bit chilly, but nice and sunny outside. We've got a fair bit to get to on today's program. First, a brief update on yesterday's follow-up Bible study up in Belfast. Brad McDonald took care of that along with one of our students, and we had seven out of the 12 that signed up for it show up for the study. So a little disappointing there. Hopefully, we were hoping, of course, as always, for everyone to follow through. But of the seven who showed up, a few of our own members who showed up to support Mr. McDonald's efforts there, hopefully we'll have some continuing fruit to come from that that pack appearance. We're already starting to get some email responses to the online pack that's coming up toward the end of February, a few emails that have come in. If I have time later on today's program, I'll read you one of them. If not, we'll get to that hopefully later this week. Over the weekend, speaking of the weekend, we passed a couple of anniversary dates. The Holocaust Remembrance Day, I think we said a few things about that last year on the program around this time, but it was January 27th, I guess that's the day that it's observed, and it's astounding. I don't know how much time I'll have later on in the show to get through some of the stories, but it's astounding just how many people, how many young people in particular, have forgotten this history. Of course, there's always a shocking segment of society that don't even believe it happened. We've talked so much in recent months about being grounded in history, and we're getting so far away from it. We're so far removed from the truth of the history, the true history of our own nations even, our own massive struggles against the forces of tyranny or communism or socialism. I covered that trend, that movement on Friday's program. Just how much the universities, how much our young people are in love with socialism. And yet you look at the path of socialism, everywhere that it goes, it leaves a trail of destruction and misery and suffering. And then you see some of these surveys, you read it at first thinking, is this a joke? Is this really serious? Did this many people really answer this way? Evidently so. Yesterday was also the 75-year anniversary of the lifting of the siege on Leningrad in Russia, St. Petersburg today. Hitler surrounded that city, and he just wanted to destroy the people of that city. 1.5 million people died in that siege. And if we have time, we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show as well. If not, I might even discuss it with Sam, who did some of the research later on this week. But first, we cover some of the crazy headlines that we've been seeing over the course of, well, for many months now, for many years, in fact, and the influence behind it all. At the start of chapter 2 in Mystery of the Ages, the mystery of angels and evil spirits, Herbert W. Armstrong said that all the evils and troubles in the world are caused by minds clashing with minds. What is the real cause behind these clashing minds? Well, it's the invisible spirit world. There's a lot about that in your Bible. The Apostle Paul wrote in Ephesians 6 and verse 12 that we're not striving against other human beings. We wrestle against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. We're wrestling against evil spirits. There is a real spirit world. And yes, it might be invisible to the naked eye, but the spiritual realm is actually more real than the visible material realm or material creation. The spirit realm comes first. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4 says that Satan is the god of this world. Ephesians 2 and verse 2 says that human beings walk according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air. That would be Satan the devil, the god of this world. He's the prince of the power of this air. The spirit, it says in this verse, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience. Now, as Mr. Armstrong wrote in that same chapter of Mystery of the Ages, he said, people simply do not realize that there is an invisible spirit power injecting into their minds these hostile attitudes. They just don't realize it. It's not just that we minimize or de-emphasize Satan's powerful influence. We don't even know it's there. We don't even realize that it's there. And you add to that the fact that Satan's hateful and destructive influence is far worse now than it has been in any previous generation. Why? Well, the Bible tells us that in these last days, there was a universe-shaking spiritual war in heaven. Michael and his angels, it says in Revelation 12:7, they prevailed against Satan and his demons. It says there's no more space for Satan and his demonic army in heaven. They're now confined to this earth. That's in Revelation 12. And your Bible says, therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you. You people on earth, that is, having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time. That's Revelation 12 and verse 12. The heavens and all who dwell in them are rejoicing over Satan's expulsion. But God says, woe unto this earth, because Satan and his demons are here. And they know they have a short time left. That's it. Their rule, their reign on earth is about over. And that's why this world, your world, our world, is coming apart at the seams. This is why nation is rising against nation, as Jesus said. This is why there's so much calamity that then results in pestilence and famine and disease epidemics. Satan is the cause of all the violent social disorder and unrest that we see on earth today, even in the more prosperous nations of the West. Satan is the father of murder. He's the father of lies and deception. And like Ephesians 2 brings out, we just read it, he surcharges the air. That's the way Mr. Armstrong put it. He surcharges the air with his spirit of unrestrained emotion, like anger, bitterness, strife, jealousy, and envy. Mr. Armstrong wrote an article back in 1982. There's a hidden enemy in your home. He said, the great tragedy of our generation is that nearly all people mature physically, perhaps half to two-thirds mature mentally, but very few ever grow up emotionally or spiritually. Now that's a quote from 1982, before Satan and his demons were cast down and confined to this earth, hardly anyone grows up emotionally or spiritually, he wrote back in 1982. Now, you look at our world today, and the prophecies talking about these last days. Isaiah the prophet said, "And I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them." So many of our princes, so many of our leaders, they rule like children. They're not progressing. It's the other direction. You look at the judgment and the decisions and the pronouncements, the speeches, the oratory. You can go back and read the first two verses of the chapter. God says he takes all of that away in these last days. And children rule. Verse 12, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them." It's the leaders who are the problem. The leaders are ruling. They have the mentality of a child. They've never grown up. And how did Mr. Armstrong put it? Well, everyone matures physically. Maybe there's two-thirds. This is in 1982. Maybe there's two-thirds that mature mentally, but very few ever grow up emotionally and spiritually. Spiritual ignorance. It's ubiquitous in the world today. And look at the childishness. Children oppress, it says. Neil Ferguson here in the UK, he had a column yesterday in the Sunday Times saying that feeling, your emotions, beats truth in our indignant immocracy, he calls it. He leaves off the D. Because emotions reign today. It's not so much a democracy as it is an emocracy. We live in an emocracy where emotions rather than majorities rule, and feelings matter more than reason. He says the stronger your feelings, the better you are at working yourself into a fit of indignation. The more influence you have, the more indignant you can become, the stronger will be your influence. It was John Adams, centuries ago, who said that facts are stubborn things. Well, they're not stubborn anymore. Emotions are much more stubborn than facts. Ferguson refers to that. We played this for you last week. The response that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had when she was called upon to answer for all of the misstatements that she had made, the facts that she keeps getting wrong. And this was that exchange with Anderson Cooper, clip one.
"One of the criticisms of you is that your math is fuzzy. The Washington Post recently awarded you 4 Pinocchios.
Oh my goodness.
For misstating some statistics about Pentagon spending.
If people want to really blow up one figure here or one word there, I would argue that they're missing the forest for the trees. I think that there's a lot of people more concerned about being precisely, factually, and semantically correct than about being morally right."
And really, she's wrong about that. There's more people today who are just concerned about their narrative, or as she puts it, being morally right, than they are about getting the facts. And it's a story, it's a headline story, it's a featured story, particularly in America, every day almost, if not every day, every other day. Just, it was astonishing to me to see all of the, just the circus surrounding the Roger Cohen, or not Cohen, who's the other guy? Who? Stone, there we go, Roger Stone. He's arrested Friday morning. To think about the 8 days leading up to that. The Covington boys before that, the BuzzFeed story, the Covington thing that went several days forward. And then you get to Roger Stone. Crazy, a crazy and chaotic circus. Ferguson, in his piece, he spends a fair bit of time talking about how the boys or those teenagers reacted when they were confronted by the adults. It was the adults there who were acting like little children. The Native Americans and then the black Hebrew Israelites. They were insulting the teenaged boys. And Ferguson says, I have four boys. I'm the father of four boys. And I feel like that those Covington Catholic pupils exercised quite a lot of self-restraint. Here are the Indians. Here are the black Hebrew Israelites going after those boys, acting like children. That was the story, the big story, for a better part of a week. And then you arrive at the Roger Stone indictment. And never mind the facts. It's all a circus. It's all a show. It's intended to arouse emotion, anger, hysteria. And it works. More and more it works. There's not more people that are concerned about being precise with the facts. They're concerned about really trumpeting their narrative, their truth, as we've covered before on this show. Andy McCarthy over the weekend in talking about that Stone indictment. He says it's the latest blatant demonstration that that special counsel Robert Mueller's office, the Department of Justice, and the FBI have known for many months that there was no such conspiracy is proof. If you just read through the indictment and you see what's there, okay, so he gave a testimony before the House committee in 2017, and all of the so-called crimes are based upon what he said in that testimony. Well, but you said this later in a text or earlier in an email, and it conflicts. He says here, yet fully aware that the Obama administration, the Justice Department, and the FBI had assiduously crafted a public narrative that Trump may have been in cahoots with the Russian regime, they have allowed that cloud of suspicion to hover over the presidency. The special counsel has allowed this because they're after the president. They want to destroy him. And so if there's anything exculpatory that they discover, they don't trumpet that. They don't show that. What they show, what they publicize, it's like what you saw on Friday morning. Talk about collusion. I tweeted out that there were 12 agents. In fact, it was, I think, 29. 29 agents that went to arrest this 66-year-old. Say what you will about that man's character, and many have said what they believe, but the way he was arrested, and the fact that, as Andy McCarthy says, you go through that indictment and it proves there was no collusion, and so instead of trying to come out with the truth, these are grown men, mind you, men and women, Robert Mueller's special counsel. These are the adults. And instead of removing that cloud of suspicion for the good of the country, they have let it hover. Nancy Pelosi just tweeted, what does Putin have on President Trump politically, personally, or financially? This is the House Speaker tweeting. People want to criticize President Trump's tweets. This is the House Speaker tweeting that the President of Russia, he has something on the President of the United States. It wasn't that long ago when the media, they would erupt each time then just regular old citizen Donald Trump questioned Barack Obama's birth certificate. They would scream, that's a conspiracy theory. That's crazy. He must be mentally deranged to keep bringing up this birth certificate thing. Nancy Pelosi tweets out that the President of the United States is a Russian stooge, and no one thinks that's unusual. That's absolutely reasonable. They have crafted, as Andy McCarthy says, this public narrative that Trump may have been in cahoots with the Russian regime, and they've allowed that cloud of suspicion to hover over the presidency. Listen to what Alan Dershowitz said about the Stone arrest over the weekend. Clip two.
Mueller has hardly indicted anybody for crimes that occurred before he started the investigation. Almost all of these crimes, like this one, occurred during the investigation. They're process crimes. They're not crimes of substance. Now, in the indictment, Mueller tells an interesting story about WikiLeaks, but he doesn't charge him with anything like that. He can't defend himself against that at trial. At trial, he's only charged with lying and tampering with witnesses and obstruction with justice, all of which occurred after Mueller was appointed. And so far, Mueller has come up relatively empty on crimes that occurred before he was appointed, which was his mandate.
If you take a moment on Friday to look through the indictment, which is just, these are allegations. He was very quickly given bail, $250,000, I think it was, and then he was back out, which in itself says something about how it was a total circus from the beginning. No judge would have given him that low of a bail figure if he was that much of a threat, if he was that dangerous as the FBI made it seem. Byron York had a piece also saying that on closer examination, the indictment, there's much less there than it seems. And he makes the point that you can look at what is said in the indictment and then also what isn't said or what's not prosecuted. He had a long testimony before the House, and then they caught him on, and one lie was just ridiculous. He said he had had something like email and telephone communication. It turns out it was just telephone or the other, I forget which. But they caught him. That's a lie. You lied in your testimony. Victor Davis Hanson, his take over the weekend. It says, after 21 months, it says, he makes the second point here, too. Why after 21 months is the special counsel still hounding minor transitory Trump officials? Stone was fired from the Trump campaign way back in August 2015. But they keep going after these, as he says there, these minor officials in hopes of flipping them so that they can then witness against Donald Trump. It says Stone, like all other Americans indicted by Mueller so far, is not charged with any crime close to collusion. It's not even close. They're all crimes, as Dershowitz brought out, that have occurred after Mueller was appointed. Process crimes. Just like with General Flynn. A lie or a misstatement made after the fact or during the investigation. Victor Davis Hanson says, if Stone lied under oath to Congress, as Mueller alleges, then by all means prosecute him to the fullest. But what exactly are the federal criteria that adjudicate when and where lying under oath to Congress or to federal authorities is a prosecutable crime? He says further on, after all, nearly the entire Obama administration intelligence hierarchy not only lied under oath to Congress, but in some cases they confessed to such. They made the lies, you know the ones, Clapper, Brennan, and so on. They lied, and in the case of Clapper, they came back later and admitted it. Well, yeah, here's why I lied. Why isn't there an equal standard of justice? Victor Davis Hanson is asking. And then, as I say, the spectacle. There was a great piece at The Spectator just today. How many FBI agents does it take to terrorize an unarmed 66-year-old? This is a former prosecutor himself. He's been involved in planning arrests for mob bosses and the like. Kingpins, drug lords. And he says that when they plan those kinds of arrests, they have to be very careful about how many they send. Obviously, you need enough in case, you need enough agents in case something does go bad with some of these hardened criminals, some of these crime bosses. But at the same time, you can't send too many agents, because if there is a shootout, a lot of times the biggest risk is for being hit by friendly fire. 29 agents. 29 agents. And then, of course, CNN's just on the, they're on the sidewalk, 30 feet from the front door of Roger Stone. And then all these guys walking in and around the TV crew with machine guns. The Spectator author says that there was a time not that long ago when you could invade a small country with 29 people with machine guns. 29 agents plus CNN video support? Seriously? It's all about whipping up the emotion. It's all about whipping up the media. Selective outrage. Well, it didn't go so good for us with the Covington boys. So here we've got another story. This is the one. This is the bombshell. This is the one that brings the president down. You know the narrative. You know the reaction. But when you step back and look at what was happening on television screens Friday morning, as we were just finishing up preparations for our broadcast, 29 agents and CNN that just happened to know, they just happened to know it wasn't a leak. Now, CNN discerned it. They knew that something was up with the grand jury in Washington, D.C. So they sent a crew down there Friday morning at 5 a.m., and then the FBI stormed Roger Stone's house at 6 a.m. It was perfect timing. You have to give CNN credit. And imagine that. It was CNN, the network that absolutely hates and despises Donald Trump. Leak after leak after leak, even leaks coming from Robert Mueller's special counsel. And then in the indictment on Roger Stone, here's the special counsel appalled that Roger Stone would try to figure out when WikiLeaks is going to release the information about Hillary's server. I thought that's what reporters were supposed to do. Just go after leak after leak after leak to try to find out what they can report first before the pack. There's just leaks galore going on even to this day. And then 29 FBI agents. This guy that wrote the Spectator piece said that nine times out of ten, we'd call the defense counsel and just say, hey, can you tell your client to come over here because we need to arrest him? If he's not a threat to flee the country or anything, just take care of it that way. Of course, that was a point Roger Stone made on Friday. Listen to Newt Gingrich, what he said about this pre-dawn raid over the weekend, clip three.
This whole thing has become such a clear, vicious act of destruction that people will ask themselves, is this really America? When at 6 in the morning, somebody who's not violent, has no record of violence, has armed FBI agents in full battle vest pounding on the door at 6 a.m. while CNN covers it, there's something despicable about what's happening in America today.
Why is this happening? Who's behind it? Who's behind this kind of nefarious activity? These kinds of vicious acts? Acts of destruction? Scorched earth. Last week we told you about that story, or the legislation in Albany, New York. The New York abortion bill. Now they can have abortions all the way up to the birth, even. They don't have to stop at 24 weeks. You can do it at 32 weeks. You can do it at 36 weeks, 37, 38 even. If the mother is, if she's under a threat, physically, if her health is dependent on it, and who determines that, of course? Well, it's the healthcare professional that decides. And you remember how vague the terms are. If it's needed, something to that effect. If the healthcare professional feels like it's needed, well, over the weekend there was this OBGYN doctor who tweeted out that there's not a single fetal or maternal condition that requires a third trimester abortion. Not one. There's no reason for this to happen, even if the mother's life is in danger. Well, with the technology that hospitals have today, you can retrieve the baby prematurely and most likely save the mother as well. Now, doesn't that seem like what a human being would want to do with a 35-week fetus? With a 37-week fetus? There's complications. There's difficulties. Let's go ahead and have a C-section. Let's take out the baby. Let's save the mother. Let's save them both. But that's not the way so many people think today. The way so many people think today is just appalling and disgusting in every respect. This is the scene from Albany last Tuesday when Governor Cuomo announced this so-called Reproductive Health Act, Clip 7.
We have to go even a step further and do a constitutional amendment so no governor, no legislator, no political swing can ever jeopardize a woman's right to control her own body.
The lawmakers thought it was great. They finally have enough Democrats to get this legislation through. They've been trying to get it through for years. Just as a safety valve, too, because if Roe v. Wade is ever reversed or scaled back in any way, we want this locked in. And we don't want any Republican administration to come along later and to reverse this. We want the women to have the right to choose whether or not they want an abortion at week 39. And there's not a single condition that requires this kind of an act. Just like that doctor tweeted out, he was on Fox over the weekend as well, Dr. Omar Hamada. And here's what he said, clip 4.
In the third trimester of pregnancy, there is not a single condition that requires an abortion. There's not a single condition that requires that we kill the baby before delivery. There are several things in third trimester pregnancy that require that we deliver the mother, and that is a fact, but there's not a single thing that actually requires us to kill the child.
Not a single thing. And yet with this new law now, you can kill the child in the name of saving the mother, kill the child. Not one single thing, he went on to explain, this doctor, about what this new legislation does in detail. Clip 5.
It does three things. It actually removes all the protections for the fetus by removing any homicidal protections. So before, the New York Penal Code basically stated that after 24 weeks, if a baby was killed, there was a risk of the perpetrator being charged with a homicide. That's been removed. It allows for any healthcare practitioner that's licensed or authorized, as the legal terms in the bill state, to perform an abortion. So it doesn't have to be a physician. And it removes all restrictions at all for any type of abortion at any time for any reason.
All restrictions for any type of abortion at any time for any reason. That's in the great state of New York. Where does that thinking come from? Who inspires it? Why the passion? Why the uproarious cheers for this kind of law? I mentioned last week that for every two live births that they have in New York, there's one abortion. It's only 2-1. And no doubt that ratio is going to go in a much more frightening direction in the months and years ahead because of this new law. Kamala Harris, she announced her candidacy for president over the weekend and got quite a strong showing of support. 20,000 people, I think, came out to support her. She's another outspoken critic of the presidency, and in this particular clip, talks about the crisis at America's southern border, and here's what she said, clip six.
When we have children in cages crying for their mothers and fathers, don't you dare call that border security. That's a human rights abuse.
More and more cheers there. You see, there's children in cages. That's what we want to focus on in this era of emocracy. Never mind border security. Never mind upholding the law. Never mind the immigration laws. Never mind any of that. There's a child, and he's in a cage. And this is intended to whip up the emotional support, the emotional outcry, the selective outrage. Don't bother upholding the laws. Certainly not while we have kids in cages. And well, on and on it goes. If you're wearing a MAGA hat, it's a KKK hood as far as some are concerned. Donald Trump, he's Hitler. Nancy Pelosi, she can cancel the State of the Union address because she doesn't like the president. No other reason, a hundred-year-old tradition. But she hates and despises the president. So it's canceled. It's off. Out the window, that tradition. You see where this is going. Total anarchy. Judges 21-25. There's no standards. There's no supreme law, whether it's at the border, whether it's with respect to abortion. There's no absolute law of the land. It's just turning into a free-for-all, the wild, wild west. Every man doing what seems right in his own eyes. Richard pulled a story last week about this writing professor who said that grading papers can be racist if you hold the authors to a standard, a definite standard. Because, well, that standard would have been pushed, no doubt, by someone who was white, someone from the Western civilization. And so we can't hold students to that kind of a standard. It's racist to help them, to teach them to write correctly. This university that he works for, this is in Washington State. Surprise, surprise. The university produced a poster that says their aim is to help students write and succeed in a racist society. Racism, it says, is the normal condition of things. Racism is pervasive. It is in the system, structures, rules, languages, expectations, and guidelines that make up our classes, school, and society. Racism is in rules. Racism is in languages, it says. You see the spirit behind this. The rules, they're the problem. The laws are the problem. The laws are racist. So we have to do away with the law. My father in Mystery of the Ages, sorry, in Malachi's Message, he talks about how that the Laodicean problem is that they wanted to be a standard unto themselves. They didn't want to submit to the Philadelphian standard. And look at the chaos and the destruction that brought into the worldwide Church of God. Mr. Armstrong talked about a system of standards, traditions, in the missing dimension in sex. He says, in the modern rebellion against just about everything, including puritanical taboos, the world is tending to reject any and all authority and is turning more and more to impulse and unbridled desire, he said. That's Ephesians 2 and verse 2. It's not facts that are stubborn things anymore. It's emotions. It's anger. It's resentment. It's hatred and strife. And the louder you can shout, like Neil Ferguson says, the louder you can go with this indignation, this uncontrolled emotion, well, the more credible you'll be seen. That's an amazing statement. The last version of MDS, that was in 1981. The world is tending to reject any and all authority and is turning more and more to impulse and unbridled desire. That's out of control emotion. Now, emotion, God created emotion, but he gave us a human spirit. He gave us a mind to be able to control that emotion. He gave us his law. He gave us the Holy Bible, his inspired word, so that we can know what is lawful and what is not. And that anger, if it's not righteous indignation, look at how destructive, that uncontrolled anger can be. Look at history. Look at the track record, as I say, of socialism, going back to Friday's program. There's things about it, the way that they're expressed. Oh, it sounds good. Elizabeth Warren last week was talking about, we want to implement a wealth tax. If I'm president, we'll implement a wealth tax. We'll actually go after people's assets every year. 2% year in, year out. Now, that's on top of the 70% on the income for rich people that Ocasio-Cortez wants. And that's on top of the confiscation of property, even, as Bill de Blasio has talked about in New York City. If it's not used the right way, well, we have the state. We have the city authorities to come in and take it over because we know what's best for the masses. Mr. Armstrong said, young people today are given nothing to live for, no hope, no future. They're more prosperous than ever before. They're bored. They're rebellious. The spirit of revolt is in the air. He says further on, human nature, listen to this, and think about Ephesians 2:2, and think about 2 Corinthians 4:4, and think about Revelation 12:7 through 9. Human nature is simply the subconscious pull of a definite attitude of mind. It is the attitude that became Satan's. It is the natural attitude implanted from infancy by the invisible Satan. It is the attitude of vanity, of self-concern, of lust and greed. It's the attitude of hostility to others and resentment of authority over it. And you see evidence of that attitude everywhere that you look, and in particular now that Satan has been cast down and that the Bible has been just absolutely trashed. There's an excerpt in the booklet, my father's booklet, America Under Attack, where he talks about will worship. He uses the example of Adolf Hitler, who said that when you tell people in the mass, in a receptive state of fanatic devotion, will remain. Words received under a hypnotic influence are radical and impervious to every reasonable explanation. And then my father says, that's a quote from Hitler, and my father says, this is the type of influence we see holding a grip on many people today. This hypnotic influence cannot be explained reasonably. You just can't explain it. You cannot explain it logically. It's irrational if you don't understand the truth about the real, invisible spirit world. And I've given you just a few scriptures today describing it. It is real. It's more real than the physical. Hitler said, "A new age of magic interpretation of the world is coming, of interpretation in terms of the will and not of the intelligence." In other words, facts. Facts won't matter. What matters is will. What matters is imposing your will. We don't want future generations or future administrations coming along and changing this back. This is the law. This is now imposed on the people of New York. There is no changing this, so said New York's governor. And so now New Yorkers can cheer, because they're fellow New Yorkers. They can go in. If it's not working right for the mother, and if the so-called healthcare professional decides that it would be better to go ahead and kill the baby at 37 weeks, we'll go ahead. It's lawful. That's legal. That's passed the New York legislation, or the legislature. It's been signed by the governor. It's will worship, as Colossians 2 brings out. The worshiping of demons, as it should read, there in Colossians 2, 18. It all has a show of wisdom. In fact, it's will worship. My father said that's exactly what Hitler was talking about. But on another level, magic interpretation in terms of the will. He said, look, this is what it's all about. Your reasoning isn't going to stop us. That doesn't mean anything to us. We follow this magic interpretation today. Don't tell us it's right or wrong. Don't talk about absolute truth. Don't talk about God's law. We follow this magic interpretation. And as my father says, will worship, it just boils down to worshiping demons. This is the age that Hitler wanted to bring about. This is the world Satan wants. And he, if you look around at the world today, he has it. He has it. People in this world today, they're not looking to the Bible. They're not looking to God for answers. They're not looking to God for instruction. They're not seeking guidance. This is the only way, it says over and again in the scriptures. If you don't follow the path that's lit up by the Holy Bible, then you are just going to descend into darkness, spiritually speaking. What did Mr. Armstrong say? Everybody grows up physically. And, well, maybe there's a good chunk that grow up mentally, but emotionally and spiritually. If he's saying that back in 1982, what would he say today? Look at the influence that we see taking over the political scene, entire government agencies in the United States. My father says, can you recognize it? The U.S. government is casting aside the foundational law of the land and telling us, look, that's just getting in the way. We don't need that old law. We know what justice is. You can trust us. Who cares what the Constitution says? And, I'm getting a little nervous because maybe a leader down the road we'll scale back Roe v. Wade, so let's go ahead and pass this legislation while we have time, while we have the opportunity, while we have the majority, and let's make it so that it can never, ever, ever be reconsidered. That's will worship, and that's coming from a real spirit world. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a couple of emails. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
So the Holocaust Remembrance Day material and the end of the siege on Leningrad, we'll have to save that for later this week, which is fine by me because I just didn't have as much time to work with that material as I did with the material we covered in the first segment. So we'll finish today's show with a couple of emails and then hopefully with what we've touched on here on those other subjects, you'll tune in for the rest that we've pulled together. This one here comes from Vancouver, Canada. It says, I once told a history professor that I was of Yugoslav extraction. And he responded with, I think that Yugoslavia was communism done right, or something along those lines. And then our listener says, never mind the fact that it was Tito's debt problem that was one of the fundamental causes of the disaster in the 1990s. It says further on, regardless of where you look, every deferring form of socialism has led to some form of disaster, from relatively benign Yugoslavia and Hungary to their more aggressive neighbors across the border, such as the Soviet Union and East Germany, to the current fiasco in Venezuela. The lesson of history is that socialism never works. Even countries like Vietnam saw that the system didn't work and abandoned ship to a degree. You would think, it says, you would think that people would learn from the striking dock workers in Gdansk and the sit-in protests in Leipzig that the average man is not happy in a socialist state. I recently read a really nice but heavy nonfiction book about East Germany, which included some actual interviews with members of the former East Berlin government, including former Stasi agents. I couldn't believe it, but these guys seem to have actually believed that they were doing the public a service by liberating them from capitalism. Some of these communists have deceived themselves so thoroughly that nothing could cause them to believe that Adam Smith wasn't the real founder of Nazism. He says, as a university student in ultra-left Vancouver, hearing people talk about the glories of socialism, really riles me up. Well, one last one here says, I've been following the PCG for almost 10 years now. I believe it 1,000% I've finished up through 13, lesson 13 of the correspondence course. I've given my tithes and offerings for 3 years. But there are a few things stopping me from going all the way. I have an addiction to cigarettes, and the desires of the flesh could be overwhelming. I want to go all the way through the conversion process. I've read Mystery of the Ages. I've read America, U.S. and Britain in Prophecy twice. I've read every single book that you produce. I know that I'm of the tribe of Ephraim. I also voice my knowledge to coworkers, my family, and anyone who will hear. I tell people that Christ is about to return and that Germany is waiting for a strong man, but I couldn't bring myself to go through the full conversion because I count the costs. I just had to get that off my chest. So here's someone that's probably not unlike a number of others who read our material or who listen to these broadcasts. They know what's the truth, like Ezekiel 33 says, but it's so difficult for them to go on and do what God says that we must do. So pray for him, and perhaps this email feedback will give us some good insights into what we can talk about in upcoming public appearance campaigns. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.